Christmas Eve, 7 p.m. Go to northstatesymphony.org for info on this free online event. And of course, some of the local art galleries have group shows that they had planned before the most recent coronavirus measures to be in person, but now it's online only. But you can go to Museum of Northern California Art at monca.org, the 1078 Gallery at 1078gallery.org, and the Paradise Art Center at paradise-art-center.com, and see the shows online.
Hello, this is Ken Logan, and you are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Again, this is Ken Logan, Dr. Ken Logan, and I want you to stay tuned for the Doctor's Inn. But first of all, let me see if I can get us some music on.
Innovation. And by Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals.
Said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. To the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple, it's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse, don't spill it now. I went to the doctor, doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse.
Well, hello. Again, this is Ken Logan, Dr. Ken Logan. And if you're wondering, does Dr. Ken Logan know how to run a computer? Well, the answer is, well, I guess you probably know the answer to that already. So I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and I do the Doctor's Inn 1 hour each month, the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m., and what I like to cover are things, or information about subjects relating to health and the medical world. And as a doctor, a major part of what we do, or what I do, most of us do as doctors, is teach and share information. So that's what I like to do on this show. Welcome to the Doctor's Inn. If you have a subject that you would like, health or medical-related subject you would like me to cover on the Doctor's Inn, you could email me. I'm going to give you my email address right now, klogan.md@yahoo.com. You need to know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They are my opinions. I also want you to know that the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your event listed, visit Friends of the Art. I'm not sure how you get in touch with them, to be honest with you. probably friendsoftheart.com or .net. And by Dallmeyer Insurance Agency, an independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Dallmeyer Insurance provides a range of coverage options from home and auto insurance to farm and ranch coverage. You can reach Dallmeyer Insurance in Chico at same area code 530-342-6421 and in Orrville, same area code, and 533-3424 or at chicoinsurance.com. So on the Doctor's Inn today, let me give you a little outline of what I'm going to cover on the show today. And I'm going to start out by talking about something that I've been trying to understand as best I can, and that's the mindset, to figure out the mindset of a large portion of the people in our country who are holding tightly onto misinformation. It's bothersome to me that it is occurring and continues to occur, and I'm wondering what's up with that. So I've got an article that I'm going to speak about and some information about, just some ideas about that, and an article from JAMA, that a Journal of American Medical Association, that talked specifically about that. I'll talk to you about that in a minute. Secondly, I have to lay out some COVID virus issues. I just have to. I know you've been hearing COVID, 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 and you have to. And please let me, as a doctor here, a family doc, give you some information, and things are changing, like vaccine testing, etc. So I need to talk to you about some stuff. I want us to get our minds together on that, especially vaccines and testing. That's a couple things that I... And I'm going to talk about quarantining and isolating, those issues too. If I have time, I may go into influenza. And I listened to the last... one of the last guests, and I will tell you, influenza isn't a 24-hour flu thing. The 24-hour flu thing isn't a 24-hour flu thing at all. That's a different virus that isn't the flu. So influenza can be a week, week and a half, 2 weeks illness, fever, and can look just like, to many degrees, I mean many ways, like COVID. You just need to know that. So I'll talk a little bit about that, about flu vaccination. I probably won't have time to get into cancer, colon cancer screening, or nutritional security, but those are two issues I hope to be talking about next month on the show. So, again, I'm going to start with me trying, and you, I hope, trying to understand where this big piece of our population seems to be in this misinformation, holding on to misinformation about COVID, and of course about voting, about the way the voting tallying was handled, just misinformation holders. Because there's an interesting point about people's brains and information, etc. So I'm going to start with that by saying that concepts of science and abstract thought and reasoning, and common sense even. What do those all mean? Well, what do they mean as for any individual or any group of individuals? Why am I bringing up those concepts to talk about now? It's because we're smack dab in the middle of things that are happening that are important, such as the COVID and the election that we just had. Abstract thought, science, and reasoning, these are concepts that some people hold and are able to function in quite readily, and some people have some difficulties with that. And what can come out of that are reactions, responses and reactions in people who become frustrated and angry. And by the way, it even has to do with issues and understanding of concepts such as not only COVID, but the illnesses of COVID and deaths of COVID, and climate change is another subject that some people have difficulty wrapping their brain around. Today, we, especially in this country, see many people who are harboring ideas and beliefs that are based in falsehoods, based on false information. It appears to me that feelings of mistrust and feelings of paranoia are present in many, many people currently. Then, when it comes to certain issues, such as COVID, and such as issues around the presidential election, there seems to be many people who hold so tight to misinformation and paranoia, of course. Then there are people in the political world, such as Trump, who take advantage of those people and suck them in for his own power grab of people. That's unfortunate. But we don't have to worry about him, hopefully, at least not as president after January 20th. So I wanted to discuss an article in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, from this past this month, December 8th, JAMA. And the author of this article, the article is called Science Denial and COVID Conspiracy Theories. How about that? And potential neurological mechanisms and possible responses. The author is Dr. Bruce Miller, MD. He's in the Department of Neurology at University of California, San Francisco, so UCSF, Department of Neurology. So in my mind, I want to know how I can better understand these people who are in denial. These responses, dismissal, denial, anti-mask wearing, anti-vaccine beliefs, belief in conspiracy theories about the origin of COVID virus. And then of course the issue that people like Trump and other, mainly Republicans, I think, feed the fuel of those thinkers. Holding on to these misconceptions and misinformation by many Americans has led to the fact that relative to COVID prevention and precautions, et cetera, we've done poorly. However, even though we have only 4% of the world's population, we have 20% of the COVID deaths of the world. So, first of all, relative to misinformation, let's remember that the misinformation is out there. People see it. It's in their face daily, regularly, in the media and social media, depending on the TV channel or radio station or internet sites they go to. That misinformation is out there in their faces. Secondly, here's the key thing, though. A person's ability to comprehend, to understand, to evaluate information in their own mind is different in all of us as individuals. And the information that comes from credible sources, such as about COVID, is new information as we're learning as we go with this virus. And so there's changes, and the information is in a state of flux. So add those facts together that some people are bombarded with misinformation, and the other information from credible sources is in a state of flux often, and you end up with some people who are just not comfortable with the ongoing credible information like this in this evolving information situation like we have. And they tend to lean towards sources of denial and dismissal. They can feel that those sources bring them more solidity, more calming, and can belay some of their fears. Denying the virus's importance can lead to less worry and fear, and that's on a subconscious basis. Also, the situation such as COVID is very complex. The information that comes to us in the media, even in the credible sources of information, can be difficult to sort out and understand. And if someone finds difficulty with acquiring an understanding that they are comfortable with, well, they might reject the whole thing and pick up on dismissal and denial type beliefs as a reaction. Then they're able to feel less stressed about the subject, more calm, less worried. Then, however, depending on their personality, they may actually even strike out against the credible information that doesn't feel good to them. And that brings worry to them, and they're not able to even comprehend or understand. They strike out against that. And depending on their personality and any ongoing anger in their life, their striking out could be even in physical striking out and grouping together with people of similar mindsets and beliefs. And then when you got a president who feeds them, fuels the fire like Trump did, ooh, that's bad. Okay, so back to the issue of comprehension, however, of issues and concepts such as science-related concepts. Dr. Bruce Miller, that UCSF neurologist in the JAMA article from the 8th of this month, points out the fact that the issues like the COVID virus and the complexity of the issue, there's an important factor relative to determining how an individual is going to react to a situation like COVID virus has to do with the person's, and he says, he thinks this is important factor in the people who respond like that. And this is a subject he calls science literacy. And he calls it that. He brings it up. He talks about it. And that has to do not only with a person's educational background relative to science, but also a person's brain ability to deal with science-type facts and science-type thinking. He gives an example of a survey done in 2015 on 11,000 12th graders. It's called the Assessment of Education Progress, that found 22% of those students, 22% of those students exemplified some good proficiency of science, but a much bigger percentage, that is 40% of those students, 12th graders, were below basic knowledge in science. So the point being that there was a large percentage of students in the survey that were not able to think in science-related ways, or who simply had very little, if any, science-related education. Again, the COVID virus scenario is complex and changing. It's difficult to expect an adequate understanding by all of us, especially when COVID scenarios involves adherence to such big life-changing things and life-changing advice. So he feels, Dr. Bruce Miller at UCSF, feels that science literacy, yes or no, present, is a significant piece of the story relative to an individual's reaction to the COVID situation. The final helpful piece relative to understanding how a person responds to COVID issue in dismissal, denial, or anger, and relative to believing in misinformation and the lacking of what I would call sound reasoning, has to do with the functioning of the area of our brain that accepts information, deals with that information, and sorts it out as true or false. The brain circuitry in the frontal lobe area of our brains is the area where we discern reality from fantasy. And the levels of ability in that area of our frontal lobe to discern reality from fantasy, there's varying levels of ability that we have, apparently, as individuals. The neurologists, like Dr. Miller, have studied these reasoning functions in people with certain brain disorders, like a couple specific dementias and certain psychiatric disorders, and they look at things like false beliefs, such as accusations of theft, delusions of grandeur, persistent misidentification of people by facial recognition, and ongoing abnormalities in person's ability to filter misinformation or fantasy from reality. So that is present in all of us to one degree, or, you know, in some people to one degree or another. Therefore, it appears that we each, as individuals, have differing levels of ability of function relative to these discerning abilities of information via these circuits in our frontal areas of our brains. And that is, we all, to one degree or another, have differing tendencies of belief types. Beliefs that stem from reproducibly proven facts versus beliefs that don't stem from reproducibly proven facts. but rather are simply ideas that float into people's brains and in groups. They listen to groups and go with unproven misinformation, isolated from the system in the frontal lobe that discerns the truth from fantasy areas or subjects. Trippy, man. Anyway, gosh, I hope you followed that. It's kind of interesting. That JAMA article, Journal of American Medical Association, December 8th, is one you might want to look up, and it's titled Science Denial and COVID Conspiracy Theories. COVID? What is COVID? Hey, I think I'll talk about COVID now, specifically. And no, it's not just because everybody else is. It's because there's some. I'm a doctor, right? This is the doctor's in. I'm sharing information here. COVID. I want to talk about our local numbers. That is Butte County, Glynn County, Tehama County, and I'm going to compare our total numbers of infected people with COVID throughout the entire added total for the entire time of pandemic so far, and I'm going to compare 1 week ago with current. And therefore, it'll be a comparison from Wednesday, December 9th, compared to Wednesday, December 16th, which was yesterday. Butte County's total number throughout the pandemic of positive COVID cases, people testing positive, was 1 week ago, it was 4,604. So 4,600 approximately. Yesterday, it was 5,565. So in 1 week, that is a 21% rise in 1 week. Glynn County, 1 week, 1 week ago on the 9th of December, Glynn County's total of COVID cases defined throughout the pandemic was 1,085. Yesterday, 1,207. So in 1 week, they went up 11%. So not as much, but nonetheless, in 1 week, they went up 11%. Tehama County, 1 week ago, their total throughout the whole pandemic was 2,030. And yesterday, they were up to 2,392. So that's up 17% in 1 week. So obviously, COVID is here and it's doing its thing. And we got to prepare, we got to appropriately respond to that, which I'm going to talk about in real soon here, which you've heard before, but I'm going to pound it out some more with us all listening, I hope. First, let's talk about deaths in the United States. We're greater than 300,000 deaths due to COVID in the United States. Greater than 300,000 deaths in the United States due to COVID. Therefore, COVID is currently the third leading cause of death in our country, and the numbers are rising. And when we do leading cause of death numbers, they're annual numbers. They're a 12-month study look. Well, we don't even have 12 months yet, and it's already the third leading cause of death. The first and second leading causes of death, the numbers that I could find for actual years, was the most recent one that I could find was in 2017. What is the first leading cause of death due to medical disease in the United States is heart-related deaths, heart attacks, congestive heart failure, valve problems, those kind of things. Heart-related deaths in the United States is the first leading cause of death in the United States. And that number in 2017 was 648,000 that year. Remember, we're already at 300,000 on COVID, and that makes it the third leading cause of death. So the first is health-related deaths, 648,000 in the year 2017. The second leading cause of death in the United States is cancer. And in 2017, that number was a little over 600,000. So my point here is that COVID deaths are a big deal. They're the third leading cause of death in the United States. So tell that to the politicians who poo-poo the COVID virus. Important things, therefore, are we need to continue steadfastly so, adhering to the precautions of mask wearing, always, always, when out in public, and the importance of don't going out in public, staying at home. The second thing is limit your gatherings. Avoid gatherings of people. And we're heading into the holidays. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. So avoid the gatherings of people is the second thing. The third thing is when you do go around other people, such as at the store for food, you got to do that. Unless you have people bring you food, which is a good idea. Like stores bring you food. That's a good thing. And they'll do it too. If you do go out and go to the store, social distance. Wear your mask always, always. But also social distance. And that is 6 feet or more apart. There's nothing golden about 6 foot. You know, it's better to be more than 6 foot separated, I say. But 6 foot would be the minimum closeness. Don't be any closer than that. Do your best. That's my advice. So as far as the holidays go, Christmas and New Year's, oh my gosh. Let's all say it together. This year is different. Let's say it together. 1, 2, 3. This year is different. Therefore, don't get together with family and friends. Please, please, do it. Your get-togethers by telephone or by Zooming and writing Christmas cards, those kind of things. Give your family and friends a Christmas present of not gathering with them to help prevent COVID spreading in your family and in the community. That's a present you give them. You give them a meaningful present by a thoughtful, caring present by not meeting with them. Tell them that. That's how much I love you. I'm not meeting with you. That's because I love you. I'm talking to you on the phone over and over and over again. I'm Zooming with you if possible. And I'm writing you Christmas cards, etc. I love you. I don't want to meet with you. Therefore, I love you. All right. Okay. Now, you've probably heard about some vaccines for COVID. I know you have, because it's in the news. And they're starting. I want to I want to give an overview of vaccines for COVID, of COVID vaccines. And there's some important things about the COVID vaccines that I want us to have, you know, that we'll be on the same page. And here's the starter one. Please listen to this. Vaccines at this point in time are a good thing. Are a good thing. But in no way, shape, or form are the coming vaccinations a reason at this time to back off at all on COVID precautions that we all know about. That is, masking always when you're out. Don't go places that aren't necessary. And socially distance when you have to go somewhere. Those precautions remain. And by the way, and I'll talk about this a bit some more. I'll reiterate. I'll say this again in a few minutes. And that will go, hear me say this, that will go for the next year, maybe more. I'm telling you, vaccinations, good thing. But absolutely takes time. It takes time. Lots of time, months, and maybe a year or two before enough people are vaccinated and this immunity is widespread enough that we can have some kind of control over this virus. So vaccination's a great thing. And COVID precautions remain anyway. It's a double-edged, I mean, it's two swords. It's not double-edged swords. It's two things. Two swords are necessary in this battle. Vaccines and COVID precautions. Those two things together are both important. Together. for months, maybe a year or two. Let's see how it goes. I hope you heard me say that. We have to watch closely the, you know, these vaccines are new. We got to watch how they do. By the way, also about the vaccines, it's going to take several months to get them up and running. You know, get enough of them there, get them spread available. I'll talk to you about specific vaccines in a minute, but you already know probably that the two that are let me do this as I have it written. Here's a point I want to say about vaccinations for viruses. For those of us my age and older, decades ago, polio was in this country and the world. And we've knocked it down significantly, kept it at bay with vaccinations. That did not happen overnight. That took, I don't know exactly how long it took. I suspect it took a year or two or more to get a handle on it by vaccinations. So there is no, this is not a fast happening thing, this vaccination help. It is a beautiful help, I say, but it's not a fast help. We still have to do COVID precautions for months to come. It's part of our lives. And other issues relative to the vaccination, like numbers of vaccinations available, people being willing to take the vaccinations. I think as time goes on, people are going to get more likely to take the vaccinations. But, I mean, that's part of the issue. We need to get the numbers up of people vaccinated. But that's going to take a lot of time. And some things we don't know about the vaccinations ability to includes the fact we really don't know how long that immunity will last after a person gets vaccinated. We don't know yet. Here's another little piece of information I thought of. You know, people like Trump and Giuliani and Chris Christie, who got COVID, went to the hospital and got this monoclonal antibody given to this experimental thing, monoclonal antibody that very few doses, it won't be for the general public, and they got over their COVID. I suspect that's going to dip in. I think that's going to monkey with their own immunity. I think that will blunt their own antibody making. In other words, they might be more likely to get reinfected than people who did not receive that monoclonal antibody. I'm just wondering about that. We'll see how that goes. I, as you can tell, am in favor of vaccinations for COVID, more particularly at this time. I'm in favor of the messenger RNA, ribonucleic acid, type vaccinations. You know, this virus, COVID, is an RNA virus, which I'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about testing. But the ones on... one on the market and one that's soon to be on the market. The one on the market is a Pfizer and BioNTech injection, and Moderna will be similar. Here's the important fact. Hear this. It's a two-shot series. It's not one shot only. So a person gets the vaccination, and then in 3 weeks they get the second vaccination or the booster. If you blow it and only get one shot and do not follow up with your second shot, you will be significantly less immune to the virus than if you got the second shot in 3 weeks. You need to know that. I can't remember the percentages of immunity if you only get the one shot, but something sticks in my mind that it was down in the, I don't know, you know, sizably lower, like somewhere around 60% immune. But if you get the second shot, you're better than 95%. You get the first and the second shot, you're 3 weeks later, you're like 95% immune. So it's much better. You got to get that second shot 3 weeks after the first one. There's another vaccine being worked on in Britain, AstraZeneca vaccine. It is not a messenger RNA, but it works by the body being in the injection vaccination. It's protein, pieces of proteins that are on the outside of the virus that the body then reacts to, the immune system of the body reacts to and makes antibodies against those proteins and therefore against the virus. The good news about that one, when it becomes available, is I think it'll be a lot more widely available to people. Remember that the messenger RNA type, the Pfizer and the Moderna, require this hideously cold, unfortunately, very cold storage, like 70 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, something ridiculous. So it's very difficult, and it's going to be very difficult to distribute around the world. So the AstraZeneca, which doesn't require such drastic coldness, I think is going to be much, that kind of vaccination for COVID is going to do more for the wideness of the world, which we need, than these other two that require the significant cold storage. So AstraZeneca, I was kind of poo-pooing it, but I'm all for it now, and because I think it's going to be much easier to distribute in multiple doses all over the world and our country, because we got to get as many people immune as possible. So, okay, side effects. You all want to hear about side effects. I did. I do. So first, to the COVID vaccine. Side effects to the COVID vaccines. What are they seeing? First of all, what I'm going to say is, when I read about them, it sounds like the side effects that we get with vaccines that have been here forever, such as the flu vaccine. And these side effects are relatively minor. There are no yet major side effects found with these messenger RNA COVID vaccinations, thank goodness. However, side effects that can occur with the COVID vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna at this point, are things such as, a sore arm, of course. So 1 to 2 days or more, a little, of a sore arm, then it gets better. Maybe a low-grade fever for 1 to 2 days after you get the vaccination. And here's one way to think about the low-grade fever for 1 to 2 days after you get the COVID vaccination. Think this way. I do. Think this way. Oh, I've got a low-grade fever. I'm feeling a little under the weather for a couple days. That makes me know, or makes me think, and probably know, that my body has this COVID, not the virus itself. It's not able to give me COVID infection. But my body is recognizing this vaccination as something that it needs to fight off and make antibodies against, and other elements of my immune system to fight it off. And that gives me a low-grade fever and a tired feeling for a few days. That means, that's telling me my immune system is kicking in gear. That's what that's telling me. So that's good. I'm happy. If I get those symptoms, I'm going to say, thank God. Now my immune system is beefing up against COVID. That's my opinion. Okay, another thing. I just have to bring this up because it hit the news, apparently. And that's Bell's palsy. I just need to say something about it. First of all, here's the gig. Here's the situation. Moderna, one of the companies that's making one of the messenger RNA COVID vaccines, in the 30,000 people they vaccinated that were in the study for vaccination, four people out of 30,000 among side effects that I just described, also four people had Bell's palsy. There's a lot to say about that, but let me just say, first of all, Bell's palsy is not life-threatening. It is a relatively minor event. I'm going to describe it here in a minute, but it's not life-threatening. It's a minor event, and it's self-limited. In other words, it's very temporary. It is not, Bell's palsy is not something that is only related to COVID vaccine, even if these four cases out of 30,000 people were even if those cases of Bell's palsy were even related to the COVID vaccine, which they might not have been, because guess what? Otherwise, Bell's palsy has been around forever. It's just one of the things some people get unrelated to COVID vaccine or probably related to other viruses. We really don't know, but it's been around as long as I've been in this business. And the prevalence or how often it happens in humans is in the general population, again, prior to COVID vaccine, is 15 to 30 people per 100,000 in the general population get over Bell's palsy, again, unrelated to anything COVID. The four people out of 30,000 that the Moderna saw, if you expand that to 100,000 patients, that would be like 13 out of 100,000. So four cases in 30,000 is equivalent to 13 cases in 100,000. That's how we can compare it to numbers of Bell's palsy presence that has nothing to do with COVID, because we know that there's 15 to 30 people in the general population all the time who will have gotten 15 to 30 people per 100,000 that will have gotten Bell's palsy for whatever reason it is, and we don't know exactly what those are generally. So 13 per 100,000 is what they saw in these vaccine people. So that's of course less than what the general population gets in a regular basis anyway. So what is Bell's palsy? It's self-limited. In other words, it's not it doesn't last forever. It doesn't doesn't threaten your life. It is a nerve irritation and nerve dysfunction on the side of a person's face. And there's a reason, and I'll tell you about the location of this nerve in a minute, but it's called the seventh cranial nerve, or the other name for it, let's remember this, the other name for it is the facial nerve. And the facial nerve, which is the seventh cranial nerve, stimulates the muscles to work on the face. So it's a motor nerve, or a nerve that allows for the muscles on our face to work. So when that muscle that allows our facial muscles to work is inflamed and not working right, we get the muscles on the side of one side. It's not both sides. It doesn't happen that way. It's just one nerve, not both, because there's one on each side of the face, one facial nerve on the right side of your face, one facial nerve on the left side of your face. Bell's palsy, for some reason, just affects one of them. It would be rare to have it both. I've never heard of a case with both. And we see this periodically, always have. And now they identified a few cases in the Moderna group that had this. But anyway, the nerve gets a little unhappy, and the muscles on that side of the face start to be less able to respond and do what they're supposed to do. Therefore, there's a droop to the side of the mouth. You can't smile as good on that side of your face. And your eyelid cannot close as well on that side of the face for probably maybe around 1 to 2 months, maybe slightly longer, and maybe slightly less time. So an average is 1 to 2 months in getting better over that time. Again, it doesn't do any chronic or long-term damage to that nerve. One thing about the facial nerve, where it exits out of the skull, it comes through it happens to be just anterior, just in front of our ears on our face, where it exits from the skull area and onto the surface of this face. And when it exits out of the skull, it passes through this little skinny hole and a bone. And therefore, if it gets irritated or inflamed for some autoimmune reason, it doesn't have room to expand much because of the bone around that little hole, you know, that makes that little hole that it's passing through. So it has some symptoms come up. You know, if it weren't for that little hole it had to pass through, we wouldn't be talking about Bell's palsy, because when nerves get a little irritated, they expand a little and then they get happy and there's no dysfunction. But with that little hole that has to come through, it temporarily gets a little wonky in its function. So a droop in the mouth, eyelid droop, temporary. Most people, it's going to be rare. It's already fairly rare in the general population anyway, unrelated to COVID vaccine. But I have to say this, because I'm a doctor, a family practice doctor. Droopy mouth and eyelid is not, the only cause of that is not just this not a big deal Bell's palsy thing. So some people, and this has nothing to do with COVID, what I'm telling you now has nothing to do with COVID or COVID vaccine, but if somebody gets a droop to the side of their mouth and their eye and the side of their face is droopy, especially if they have other neurologic or brain-related symptoms such as headache, such as not thinking good, or the arm and leg on one side of the body, or the arm alone becomes weak. Also, in other words, other neurologic symptoms included with the side of the face having weakness problems in the muscles of the face, then that's a different story. That could be a brain problem, such as a stroke or a trying to have a stroke, a TIA. So my point there is, here's my point, and you all know this anyway, I suspect, regardless of COVID, with the COVID vaccine or not with the COVID vaccine, both, any, if you get droopiness of the side of your face, you need to see your doctor. So everybody who has Bell's palsy needs to see their doctor. Anybody who has additional symptoms with the face thing needs to see their doctor that day. So if you have weakness on the side of your face and additional symptoms like arm, leg, and maybe headache, maybe not thinking good, you need to go to your emergency room that day, because stroke or stroke-like activity, something needs to be dealt with immediately, because there's things they can do to prevent problems nowadays. So you got to go right away, emergency room. But Bell's palsy itself, if it's just the facial thing, is not an emergency. But, you know, you're not a doctor, so I don't, well, if you're a doctor, figure it out. But if you're not a doctor and you don't, you got to talk to your doctor. So if you get any of those symptoms, of course, talk to your doctor. Got that off my chest. Now I want to talk a little bit. I've got a few minutes left, and I want to talk about testing. I want to give you, because there's two general categories of testing for COVID. One of them is accurate, happens to be the most expensive one, but is the most accurate one, and that's the PCR, or polymerase chain reaction test, sometimes called the molecular category of testing. And molecular, as in the PCR, is looking for the RNA, the ribonucleic acid molecule of the COVID virus. They're looking for that molecule. So this is a molecular test. PCR test is a molecular test. It's more accurate. Those who test it has a reliable positivity rate. In other words, if you're positive on that, it's likely you're positive. Now, that's a very small false positive findings with that. It's done generally via... First of all, let me tell you this. let me go a little bit outside of PCR right now and tell you what the other the other test is called, the antigen category test. And it's not testing the RNA molecule. It's not testing the it's not a PCR. It's not testing the RNA molecule itself, not the COVID virus itself. It's testing little proteins for proteins that are around the virus. And one of the problems with the good news about the antigen tests are some of them are from the nose, some are from the throat. But the good news is they're less complicated to run. They are sometimes quicker to get the answer back. They are less expensive. But guess what? They have significantly more false negatives. In other words, some people could test negative and actually have the virus. So, therefore, this antigen test, this less expensive, quicker test, is not advised by me and others to be done for people who have known exposure to the, somebody with the virus or have symptoms of COVID. If you have symptoms of COVID or you've had an exposure, been around somebody who has tested positive for COVID, you do not want to use the quickie antigen test. You want to get a PCR test. You, as a matter of fact, you have to get a PCR test. And your doctor hopefully will tell you that. You have to have, in other words, the more accurate test. You don't want to miss it with a false negative with the antigen test. The antigen test is going to be helpful in the long run because it's easier to do, it's less costly, and it can go out to the population in much bigger numbers. So it's a great way to test a zillion people and get a feel for where the virus is in the community, but is definitely not the idea to use it again if you want to know as accurately as you can if you have the virus, specifically if you've been exposed to somebody with the virus or have symptoms of the virus. You don't want the quickie test, you want the PCR, the polymerase chain reaction molecular test. Relative to that antigen quickie test with less accurate test, one of the good newses about it, anyway, is that the FDA 2 days ago approved the first home test for that, where a person can, over the counter without a prescription for as little as $30, can obtain a test to test your own self with a nasal swab yourself, but not way up to the back of your nasal cavity. Don't ever do that. Follow the directions. You use a Q-tip to get part way up your nose for this home test that's now going to be on the market. Remember, again, it's an antigen test. It has a false negative rate that's higher than the PCR, so it's not as accurate. And it's not for somebody who needs to absolutely know if they have COVID, but it's fine, I think, for somebody who has no symptoms, has not been exposed, and just wants to know if the COVID virus happens to be in them and they're asymptomatic. You and your whole family, for instance. So I think that's the role it's going to play. The company that makes the one that's going to be over the counter soon, without a prescription, $30 each, you run it yourself at home, get the results yourself at home. The name of it is ELLUME, ELLUME, COVID-19 home test, ELLUME. But remember, if you do that test, you got to understand the pros and cons of it. I hope you've heard me say that. Let me say this. Antibody testing, the blood test that took for antibodies, the look for antibodies, I'm telling the general public, you and the general public, don't even think about them. They're not useful in determining, they're definitely not useful in determining whether somebody currently has COVID. The antibody testing at this point in time does not do that. Don't ask it to do that. There you go. I got to shut up now. Not shut up, but I got to switch gears. And thank you for listening. Next month, I'm going to talk about food or nutritional insecurity. I'm going to talk about colon cancer and colon cancer screening advice. I want you to know that the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Community Acupuncture, offering safe, accessible, and effective health care through acupuncture. Chico Community Acupuncture offers a sliding scale, and provides relief from aches and pains, stress reduction, and helps promote general wellness. At 1815, so 1815 Mangrove Avenue. Appointments and information at ChicoCommunityAcupuncture.com or on Facebook. You can look them up. And the phone number is 345-5300. That's 345-5300. And through the underwriting of Square Deal Mattress Factory, quote, building the best night's sleep, in a quote, since 1920, Square Deal is celebrating their 100th anniversary of making mattresses, bedding, furniture, and now face masks with fabric of your choice. Square Deal is located at 1354 Humboldt Avenue in Chico. For details, see squaredealmattress.com. You will want to know, I think, that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And then you're going to want to know that you're going to hopefully stay tuned, I hope, to Beetle Nation, I think. And it looks like Jan is here. Am I correct?
Yep.
Jan is here for Beetle Nation. That'll be fun. I'm going to turn my radio on the way home. Okay. I'm going to try to place a song, go out with a song. It's called Dear Doctor by the Rolling Stones. Let's see if I can screw that up.
Nice.
See you in a month.
Okay.
Dear Doctor, take one. Right.
Oh, help me, please, doctor, I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart. It's sleeping, it's beating. Can't you please take it out and preserve it right there in that jar? Oh, help me, please, mama. Today, that's the day I'm to plunge. Oh, the gal I'm to marry is a bull-legged sow. I've been soaking up drink like a sponge. Don't you worry, get dressed, cry my mother. As you fly me with bourbon so sour. Pour your socks up, your suit on.